On this episode of The Playbook, I have Scott Fisher, CEO of Dippin' Dots, and we talk about the company culture at Dippin' Dots and how it inspires people to think outside the box, which leads to continuous development of new innovations within the food industry. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I have an entrepreneur who has been, as I talk about quantum nature, he's quantumly an entrepreneur, grew up in an entrepreneurial family, down in a collective consciousness in Oklahoma. How are you, Scott Fisher? He's the CEO of Dippin' Dots, one of my favorite companies, favorite products, but it's not what you think it is. Scott, welcome to The Playbook.
Oh, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you bringing me on this for this interview and appreciate your time. I'm super excited about it.
Well, you know, you're blessed in one way that, you know, not only did you have the guidance of your parents who are entrepreneurs, but genetically you have what I have. You have this gene in you that looks at things differently. So the first question I have is, do you really believe in what I'm talking about, that you're just genetically fit to be an entrepreneur?
Man, there's definitely a hunger there. You know, there's a hunger there, I think, with entrepreneurs. That's one of my drives, is that adrenaline, you know, for the next deal, the adrenaline for the deal, the adrenaline of working with the team to put a deal together, you know. And that's one of the areas we've been blessed in, is with just a great team at Dippin' Dots, you know, just a team of veteran soldiers to jump in the trenches with me. And all of that, with just having the hunt for business, just, I mean, it feels good.
Well, the other thing that you have in common with me is you look for opportunities where things are oversold, right? You don't want to buy something that's already at its peak, or in my opinion, has been overbought, and you've done really well. In fact, you know, people were really down during when you bought Dippin' Dots out of bankruptcy, including some famous people. They were pretty down on the idea of Dippin' Dots.
Exactly.
But like every other entrepreneur, you saw the capabilities of Dippin' Dots far beyond just in selling dots, and you've taken it to a whole new level. What are some of the things that you look for when things, because we're going to be coming into another 2008, right? There's going to be a lot of bankruptcy, be a lot of bargains out there. What do you look for in a company to see if it's oversold?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And Dippin' Dots was kind of the underdog in that fight back in 2012, you know, following 2008 economic downturn. You know, and it was a Cinderella story. And you're exactly right. It's like Buffett's saying, be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy when others are fearful. That's exactly right, you know. And we never look for the real good deals, you know. We never look to buy a company when they're at their prime, because you're not going to get that much value. What we always look for is the right opportunities, the puzzles that are good puzzles, but may just have the pieces in the wrong places. And all it takes is us moving those pieces of the puzzle around, capitalizing it, and turning it into a good thing. And the same way we had it in 2012 with Dippin' Dots, we have a pipeline that we use for acquisitions. We have a lot of the same filters in place, to where it goes through those filters, and it's going to be it's an undervalued asset that we can add value to. And a lot of those times, those are the type of deals that we look for.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, so many people see things where other people don't. And one of the areas that you've been very successful in is you saw Dippin' Dots not just as a retail store, but as intellectual property. And intellectual property in the cryogenic freezing of ice cream, it can be utilized in a variety of different places that may actually be more valuable in the long run than even the retail locations, especially considering what's happened, you know, here with the COVID and things. You know, here, of course, because of your vision, because of your belief and your faith, and I believe this genetic side of being able to see things where people don't, you may actually accelerate through a time where many retailers and competitors of yours are just going to crash and burn. What does that take? You know, did you guys actually see the IP as an opportunity when you took it out of bankruptcy way back when Spicer and everybody was saying Dippin' Dots had no future?
He's a funny dude. That's some fun stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I saw that. I felt there's some marketability to it, but I didn't know what the market was with that, you know. And I think it's important for any business, especially a business that has generational brand equity, like Dippin' Dots. You know, the parents were enjoying the product in parks, and then they think their kids have that same experience. So there's generational brand equity, but market changes, you know. The market won't stay the same past 2-3 generations. So I think it's important for any brand, any entrepreneur, any business to be able to be fluid with the market and adjust with it. And sometimes that takes thinking outside of the box. And with Dippin' Dots, I found out after the acquisition that we had the trade secrets to cryogenically freeze stuff. You know, and I was like, oh man, there has to be some money in that stuff. You know, I mean, to be able to cryogenically freeze stuff.
Right. Just Walt Disney can't be the only one that wants to be cryogenically frozen.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It has to be marketable. I mean, it sounds fun and it has to have a market to it. So we started doing it for pharmaceutical companies. They were having us build our processes for them so they could cryogenically freeze the ingredients to their drugs. And so I saw a market there. I said, let's go out with a press release. You know, so we went out there with the press release. We had the sex appeal of the Dippin' Dots brand equity, you know, tied to cryogenics. It hit their front page of the USA Today. And I started doing speaking engagements on the cryogenics business. And the business came to us. And we had people, companies from the plant-based meat segment come to us and give us ingredients such as oils and have us use our cryogenic process to cryogenically freeze those oils to come out as pellets. And those cryogenically frozen beads of pellets and oils became simulated fats for meats. And as the plant-based meat segment grew, so did our business. And we net so much off of that because there's really no cost. We're just using our cryogenic process to be a manufacturer of these ingredients that we're the sole provider on for a lot of these large groups. And when COVID hit, so did the grocery segment, you know, and these groups that are in the grocery segments just started to, their stock prices has kept to snowball. And then as did our demand to supply, and it became a really, really big segment of our business. And that's why I was telling our guys, I said, if, you know, we're in a seasonal business with Dippin' Dots, you know, and we're tied to ice cream, tied to the parks. And that's important, but if we can diversify our company by just 10% a year, you know, then we diversify our risk exposure, diversify our revenue stream, cost of goods sold, seasonality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we started to go off in the cryogenic side. And once we made it public, the business really came to us and we found the markets that we could use those cryogenics for, the intellectual property and the trade secrets and our institutional knowledge, experiential knowledge in that segment of business. And then it just started to snowball. And now that's a really large piece of our business. And from a net perspective, it's probably our largest.
You're so incredible because one of the things that I tout myself and brand myself at is a ferocious Buddha. And I like to make room. I always say I like to make room for what I want. I allow things to happen. I take energy out of things. I don't create resistance, void, shortages, and obstacles for myself. You know, convincing one person, you know, the amount of energy it takes to convince one person that has a closed mind, I can use the energy to convince 1,000 people with open mind. So why worry about the one, right? And you know, to that respect, you know, I joke around that Roger Goodell should hire me, but after hearing you, I think he should hire Scott Fisher because for example, what you did with Spicer, right, when he was attacking you, is that you took all the energy out of it and even use it as a branding opportunity to say, hey, we're connecting dots. We connect things. We don't separate things and utilize that. And I think, you know, with Barstool Sports and Roger Goodell, if you follow that at all, you know, he falls right into Portnoy's. Portnoy, you know, is like Spicer, but Roger Goodell, he's no Scott Fisher, right? He just plays into his hand and he creates more obstacles, voids, and shortages, and he creates distance for himself, where if he just would take the same approach, if Roger Goodell's listening, which sometimes he does, by the way, you should take the connect the dots, the dipping dots approach, and hire my man Scott because he's a true ferocious Buddha, an entrepreneur. Where did the philosophy, because it's obvious in all the different things, you know, it's not as it appears, right? There is this almost Buddhist energy about you that exactly. I see things at a higher awareness and I'm looking to make room for them. Like you said, very few people would have taken the approach, and it's one that I believe in branding, that all I'm going to do is educate the market that I cryogenically own this and then allow people who need me to come to me. Right. And
me. Right.
Yeah, and you're not spending all the dollars, you know, trying to find the people who need it. You just put the information out there and allow the frequency to work for themselves. Was that philosophy or awareness trained, educated? Did you watch your parents use it? Because it is a life philosophy. It's not just an entrepreneurial one.
Right. And I think it's just looking at life as a blessing. I feel more comfortable being a learner, not a knower, you know? And so when I came into Dippin' Dots, you know, I remember like the first week sitting in the boardroom and thinking, I know nothing about selling ice cream. You know, that's a scary feeling. That's a really scary feeling. Think about the debt service associated with it, sales, everything else. But what I did was I found someone with a really, really impressive Rolodex. And I took that Rolodex and hired him as a consultant to introduce me to people. And I met people. I met a lot of guys out in the field, veterans, that had a lot of wisdom, a lot of experience, and a lot more experience than me. And I started hiring those guys as my senior management team and building up my senior management team of all these guys who are just experts in their niches. And these are guys that have been in the business for a long time and don't need to work, but they want to just because they love the hunt. They love the fellowship. They love building something. And so I had a senior management team with no egos, you know, just guys that just want, and ladies that want to build a business and build a brand. And for me, I can learn from that, you know. And the same way we do in the market, we have that same philosophy, you know, let's learn from the market. You know, I hire leaders to be part of my team for their leadership. So I use their leadership. And we do the same thing in the market. We learn from the market. So I think there's a certain blessing with kind of sitting there and being able to be aware with your surroundings and around and awareness, have an awareness of the market. And that way, you know, I wouldn't be, or another entrepreneur wouldn't be closed-minded to those opportunities out there. Because when you're open to those opportunities and you keep a certain amount of acceptance to being aware of those opportunities out there, then sometimes they can come to you. And when you see those, then you can be more fluid and move with the market. You know, and if you're open to being fluid and moving with the market, then it's easier to capture those type of opportunities as they come up.
What's so funny is you were talking about being a learner, not a knower. When I was 18, I told my brother, the doctor, that I hated hospitals and I was pre-med. And he said to me, he said, you gotta be more interested than interesting, David. And if my brother's from Oklahoma, he would have just simply said, David, you gotta be a learner, not a knower. That's the same thing. So I love that a lot. Now, obviously you aggregate, you know, I get hired a lot as that type of consultant that not only has situational knowledge and experience, I paid the dummy tax, which is the main value why people hire me. You know, why should you have to pay it? I've already done it and lost it.
Done it.
But moreover, you know, those introductions, but you said something really interesting about putting together a group of women and men, high level executives that are successful with their own relationships with no egos. And I know that people like you must have some sort of perspective on fear. And so I'd love for you to share how you feel or deal with fear and allowing or fighting or getting through that. What do you do with the fear that exists for you and your management team?
Yeah, absolutely. And fear, I believe, exists in every business. You know, I think fear is healthy. You know, it creates a caution and creates a, you know, a very conservative, pragmatic approach to any situation. But I, with there being no egos on my team, one thing that's always been important for me is for everyone to have a voice. And we try to keep that type of ability the whole way up the corporate infrastructure to where people feel safe expressing their voice, their thoughts, their opinions. Because one thing that I've learned is that everyone knows their niche of business. You know, there could be some guy in the production area and his focus is that niche and he's going to know that niche better than anyone else. You know, so for us to keep a culture, a knowledge that you can feel free to talk about what you want to talk about or voice concerns or thoughts, ideas, that's healthy for us as an organization. So I try to keep that type of culture in place. And that creates new ideas. That creates our ability to work together, to have creativity, innovation, to be able to think outside the box, to have good ideas, to have bad ideas. If it turns out to be a bad idea, to be able to recognize it's a bad idea, you know, without any type of penalty, and know when it's right to walk away, you know. And I think that type of communication and that type of culture is a necessity for a successful business. And that way there's no regrets of the past, you know, or anticipations and fears of the future, but just a peace in the presence and being present in the moment to be able to capitalize off events.
Yeah, I know you and I both believe in being present. I know you take peaceful, still time. I call it meditation. I do 20 minutes a day, and I know it has had a major impact in your life, being able to have that awareness and presence. Mm-hmm. Although today we have a compressed time of uncertainty, I always tell people, look, there's always uncertainty. It's just compressed because we're in accelerated change. And, you know, some of the areas in our industry have accelerated a decade worth of change within 12 weeks. You know, through that stillness, that neutrality, that peacefulness, what do you see next for you as an executive in the company?
Next for myself, as an executive, that's a good question. I've actually been doing a lot of reflection off that the past couple of years, you know, and one thing that I want for myself is never have a brand or a title be my identity. You know, I always want to just be a leader to the company and be involved as long as my leadership has value. You know, so that's kind of the way I see it right now, and to see myself as a blessed 40-year-old kid, you know, with a lot of good people and a lot of wisdom around me. So I'm just having fun. I see a lot of opportunities for us as a brand and the company. So I just feel lucky and blessed to be along for the ride.
I wish I had you as a mentor when I was your age, because my biggest thing was I identified myself by my bank account. My entire everything about me was identified by how rich I was or where that was. And it was an awful, awful experience. And now I share yours with being in the enjoyment of the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential and not voting for what other people want for me, but voting for what I want for the betterment of everyone, receiving what I can to give to others, to elevate myself. And as you know, I'm on a mission to empower over a billion people, looking for 1,000 people like you that I know will do the same. And we can create a collective consciousness together of happiness and health and abundance, right? A world of more than enough. You know, I always have my piece of advice to everyone is, you know, be kind to your future self and do good deeds. I like simple pieces of advice. Do you have, I know coming from the South and the parents that you have, you must have a couple good golden nuggets. At least you could share one with me. Just one of those simple things that can change somebody's life.
Yeah, you bet. One thing that I've been really focusing on and reflecting on for myself, especially for the past 12, 24 months, has been wherever I'm at to be there 100%. You know, if I'm on vacation, be there 100%. You know, if I'm in a different state, be there 100%. But living life with intention has been really important to me, you know, to be intentional with what I do. It helps bring me back to the presence, I think, you know, to be present in the moment. One of my personas character defaults is when I do chase that deal, you know, when I do get in that hunger mode, it's really easy for me to get an autopilot, you know, A to B. And when I go from A to B so quick in autopilot, sometimes I miss everything in between, you know, and I try not to do that. When I try not to do that, I find myself getting more present in the moment and being aware of my surroundings, aware of myself, which makes me a better leader, makes me better to myself. It just makes me happier and I think a better me, you know. So that's something that I try to do all the time. And by being intentional with something that I'm doing each day, and if I'm somewhere doing something, to be there, you know, 100%. That's been something I've really been trying to focus on. And since focusing on it, I've been a lot happier.
Yeah, it's a beautiful lesson to learn that everything surrounds us, we've intended, and we actually can give meaning to everything that we've actually intended by staying present in doing that. And you're doing an exceptional job as a leader and as an executive and to empower all those people, not only to make more money, but to help more people with all the pink tie stuff that you do, the philanthropy that you give, everything's coming through you. And what an honor to have you on the Playbook. I appreciate it. You're not only a CEO, but I call you a CBO, the Chief Betterment Officer, not only bettering his company employees, but himself. Scott Fisher, CEO of Dipping Dots, here with Dave Meltzer on Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.